welcome to this meeting and thank you for availing yourself. There is still a problem of transport out there and there's chaos. And also the fact that we have fewer members, the members of the portfolio committee have been changed. There are new members that are part of the committee, and I don't think that they were aware of the fact that there is this meeting, because we only came to know about those changes this morning when we came back from the weekend. So our apologies to those who have come to make presentations, shouldn't think that members of parliament are not serious about their work. It's just that the committee, the representation of committee members in each committee was changed last week, and then the notice went out on Friday afternoon when we were already left. So people have only become aware of the changes this morning, and that's why we don't have the full representation of all the members. There are also those that have sent apologies. One member from the CDA, the Honorable Professor, fell sick last week. We actually asked him to move out of the meeting because he wasn't well and he hasn't yet recovered. And there is one member also of the IMP, Honorable Lucas. He is not available for the meeting. Those are the two apologies that we have. We have two items on our agenda. One is the briefing by the Road Accident Fund on its organization. And in terms of the notice that went out, there was also an expectation that we would be discussing the no-fault policy. But we are not going to be discussing that today because it still has to go through processes before it comes to the portfolio committee. So we are deferring that to a time when all other processes shall have been finalized before it comes to the portfolio committee. The second item on the agenda is the report by the Department of on the frequent accident involvement of SA Road Link and interventions made by the department. I think that we are now ready to start. We would ask the department representative to introduce to us a delegation that has come to make presentations to the portfolio committee. But before we do that, we are also going to introduce ourselves because we are meeting for the first time. Starting with myself, my name is Ruth Bengu. I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee. I represent the ANC in the portfolio committee. I was born in Harding, so I'm very focused on issues of rural development because that area is not yet developed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Stuart Farrow from the Democratic Alliance. And I must say, if there's one thing I'm passionate about, it's safety on our roads, and we have two of the gentlemen here today, which hopefully will be able to complement each other in that regard and give me some, at least, peace of mind. Thank you.
I'm Nomuise Longele, member of this committee.
Phumzile Ngwenyamabila, member of the committee.
I I'm Pagiso Poho, representing Congress of the People, member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Dr. Maria Kurtz. I'm the Deputy Director General for Public Entity Oversight, and I have the privilege of introducing my team. Next to me, the Chief Executive Officer of the Road Accident Fund, Mr. Jacob Medisi, and then from the RTMC, apologies from the CEO, Mr. Akhwali, who couldn't make it today, and then Advocate Irelo Morule, who is the Senior Manager, Legal Services, and then Mr. Harry Buerta, Senior Executive Manager, Technical Specialist, Advisor to the CEO, and my gentleman here would have to introduce him because I don't have his particulars with me.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm Dr. Shengan Moyana, Senior Executive Manager, Traffic Engineering Information and Research, RTMC.
Thank you, Chair. Just from the side of the department, we would like to thank you for the opportunity to present to the Portfolio Committee on two very important matters. Firstly, with regard to the RTMC, one of not only a national but also provincial and municipal responsibility. If we look at our constitution, a co-operative governance model that we've created, and a very important responsibility with regard to our traffic management. Without any further ado, I would like to indicate that the RTMC did prepare a presentation to brief you on the matters requested.
Before we move on with our meeting, on behalf of the committee, I would like to take this opportunity to pass the condolences to Mr. Jacob Mabuse on the loss of his wife through accident.
The medical hospital accident, though. Not the road accident.
Oh, not road accident.
No, the doctor made a mistake.
Okay, doctor. Okay. Thank you for that. We are with you, and we have our sympathy. Sorry for that. We understand the period that you are going through, and we will not be harsh with you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to, first of all, inquire exactly as to why the CEO is not here and to establish some sort of a protocol around that, because I know we are meeting with them on the 1st of September, but I think, you know, the issue on the table today is one issue. There are many, many issues inherent in that organization which we need to resolve, and obviously we will come to that, I assume it'll be at the next meeting, is that correct, Chair? But I just wanted to raise that alarm that, you know, when we have meetings of this nature, which is of a serious issue, whether it's the road link issue or whether it's matters pertaining to the Road Traffic Management Corporation, we need to have a team here that we can effectively get answers from the top, right across the spectrum, including the board. And it would be very, very important in future to ensure that unless there is a excuse. And I would just like to, you know, establish a precedent here in the sense that we have Mr. Jacob in DC here, who actually should not be here under the circumstances. And my condolences go to him. And I'm sure our heartfelt prayers with you at this time. It's really, really sad. And I would, you know, just show an example of what in fact should happen. This meeting was scheduled, I think, four weeks ago. And, you know, so we should have made plans around that, and I would express that we should take that back to your CEO, that we are very perturbed, Chair.
Can we move on?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. we need to register the CEO's apology. We only learned of this meeting late in the evening of Thursday last week. And he had prior arrangements for a meeting with HODs regarding some of the recommendations, in fact, some of the interventions that we're implementing, which is currently underway yesterday and today, so which is why he's not here. However, we will take the message back to him, both himself and the board, so that they know exactly that there is a need for them to be here as well. Thank you very much.
May I also make a follow-up? How did you learn of the meeting only last week? Who contacted you?
It's at the Department of Transport through our board secretary.
I think from our side, we will have to follow that up with the department, because the program of the committee gets approved well in advance. And this program was actually approved before we went on recess, and we have been on recess for 3 weeks. So I would find it very unacceptable for the department not to inform the entities well in advance, and then only 2 days or 3 days before the meeting, the entities are informed, because it is going to cause an unnecessary conflict between the portfolio committee and the entities. On our side, we would feel that you don't respect us, and on your side, you would also feel that we don't respect you. We think that we can call you at any time and not give you enough time to prepare yourself for a presentation to the portfolio committee. That to us is very, very serious, because the department has got a parliamentary liaison officer that sits in our meetings, who is then responsible for taking the message back to the department to say what is the program of the portfolio committee and what entities are expected to make presentations and why. So to us, it is a very serious issue, not to yourself, but to our internal systems. And we will take the apology if it is, because it is based on the fact that you only received the information last week on Thursday. That's a very serious thing for us. You can go on.
Maybe just a response from the department side. Of course, we also only learned about the meeting on Thursday. But I think the bottom line is that we need to create a communication between the secretariat of the portfolio committee through the parliamentary liaison officer, through the department, and of course the entities, so to prevent this particular matter from occurring again. Thank you.
The committee secretary has given us information as to why this whole mess. The explanation is that the program was held at the house chair's office. We have a house chair who has to approve our program. And although the portfolio committee finalized it before it went on recess, but the office of the house chair took time to approve that. And as a result, then, before it was approved, it could not be sent out. And my apology then to the parliamentary liaison officer, because even the parliamentary liaison officer would not have done anything if the program was not approved. Sorry for that. We will take up that issue up with the House Chair's office. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Once more, I would like to put you at ease by saying we did not feel like we were caught off guard, because this responsibility falls squarely within our mandate. So it was quite a manageable activity for us to come up with a response to the question. Without any further ado, I'll just take you through the presentation that I believe you have copies of. we looked at a question, and the question was for us to come and present the interventions that we are putting in place or that we are currently implementing to address the frequent SA road link bus accidents. But we felt for us to present the recommendations in context, there is a need also to paint a picture in terms of what is happening within the bus fraternity in terms of accidents as well. Hence, the tables that you will see at the beginning, they talk broadly about issues within the bus-specific issues, but especially related to crashes in terms of buses. Once more, again, you realize that the presentation was intended to be presented by the CEO, but he delegated that we present it on his behalf, and we just take it, the committee accepted his apology. The presentation will first provide some kind of a background, which is exactly what I spoke to regarding the overview regarding the bus accidents within the bus industry, which will be followed by contributory factors related to the crashes, bus-specific crashes in particular. Of course, there is a breakdown, disaggregation, related to different vehicle types, but we will also zoom into buses in particular. And ultimately look at interventions to address bus crashes, of which road link is one. We felt we should not just zoom into road link because we have a problem within the busing industry. Whatever intervention we come up with needs to address every crash, bus-related crash in the country, instead of just focusing on road link. As you'll see from the very first slide that I'll talk to, then the presentation will be closed by opening up for comments and questions, which we'll take as a team. I'll just start with the background regarding overall and SA RoadLink bus crashes. We just gave a brief overview of about 14 top bus operators. And you'll realize that the leading one is Golden Arrow Bus Services, which has 94 crashes over the past 30 months. And the 94 crashes constitute 7.51%, followed by PATCO, which constitutes 7.35%. And as you go down the list, you realize that RoadLink, over the 30-month period, registered 12 crashes, which constitute 0.96%. I think one of the reasons why RoadLink draw everybody's attention is the severity in terms of the accidents related to RoadLink, because we've got a large number of people that lose their lives to these accidents. However, in view of all these accidents, minor as some might be, we feel we need to come up with a broad intervention that will focus on all of them. Hence, you'll realize that as we move down in terms of our presentation, the interventions that we are implementing are not just about road link, it's about the bus industry. We also felt that we need to give you an indication of state of affairs in terms of the estimated number of driver and vehicle offenses out there. You will be asking yourself how we establish all these things. On an annual basis, as RTMC, we conduct offense surveys in the country. And through those offense surveys, we are able to establish vehicle type specific offenses. That is how these conclusions were reached. If you look at, for instance, the issue of PRD, when we stopped buses, we realized that in 2007, for instance, 206,692 drivers failed to produce driver's licenses. And in 2008, 331,924 failed. And that is a 60.59% increase in non-compliance in that regard. Looking at issues of PRDP, where buses fall squarely in 2000, there is a decline of 24,915 drivers in terms of non-compliance in that regard, and that's a 47.45% decline. which it's something to write home about, but you still have some enigma in terms of why all these accidents, despite the decline in the number of non-compliance regarding PRDPs. If you look at worn and damaged tires, I'll just talk to Bart's honorable chairperson. In 2008, in fact, a change in compliance, I mean, change in the occurrence of this offense shows an increase of 712 buses that had worn and damaged tires, which is a 72.95% increase. And that already identifies areas that need immediate attention in terms of interventions. In terms of defect lights, which have implications in terms more especially driving at night, if you look at buses, we also have an increase of 3,527 buses that had defect lights. That was established through the very survey that I alluded to, and that is an 874% increase in terms of non-compliance in that regard. And that's quite scary, and that explains why we have so many night bus accidents or vehicle-related accidents. Again, if you look at issues of roadworthiness, I'll still talk to buses. We had an increase in terms of buses. Initially, in fact, in 2008, up to June, we had somewhere around 7% in terms of unroadworthy buses. However, if you look at the increase, we are now sitting at 10% by now, by June 2009. In terms of unroadworthy vehicles, in particular buses. I'm just turning a blind eye on the other vehicle types so that we move to that. Then in terms of roadworthiness, one small vehicles with light defects, that is a breakdown by provinces. I'll just talk to the national picture. If you look, we have a very huge jump from 2007 to 2008 from just over 0% to almost 10% in 2008, which is a scary jump if you look at it, because that explains why we have so much night bus-related accidents. In terms of worn and damaged tires, I'll also talk to national. You realize also here that we have a jump, just like I said when I started. Again, in terms of driver fitness. Driver fitness, when I started with specific reference to buses, PRDPs, we had an increase as well in terms of drivers that were found without PRDPs. Issues of alcohol, I think this is another killer on the road. If there is a huge jump, more especially in terms of Gauteng and the Western Cape, and the Northern Cape in particular, more especially at night in terms of exceeding alcohol limit. And the national increase is quite scary, as you can see. Again, still on driver fitness, looking at speed limit. Daytime, it's quite reasonable. We've got very few drivers exceeding the speed limit daytime, but at night, that's where problems start, which again can probably be attributed. I mean, all these bus accidents that we brought us here together today can be attributed to the night speed limit exceeding tendencies by drivers. We also have vehicles involved in crashes. If you look at buses again, looking at 2008-2009 relative to 2007-2008, there is also a registered increase in that regard. Last year it was just over 15%. Currently we are sitting at over 20%, which is a concerning increase again. Regarding vehicles involved in crashes, you realize that despite the fact that in about five provinces, a decline was registered in terms of bus accidents, those that registered an increase, if you look at Northwest and Mpumalanga, for instance, They tend to nullify whatever gains we had in terms of decreases in the other five provinces because of the huge increases in that regard. So it's not something for us to celebrate yet. We still need to have interventions that will focus on those that registered increases. Well, of course, even though we can talk of decreases, you can have a decrease, but which comes with increases in the number of people that lose their lives in a single accident or two. So we just have to make sure that we literally move close to there is always talk that we can't talk of eliminating, we can talk of reducing, but we just have to be ambitious and talk of eliminating if it's possible. And I think it is possible by joining hands. Then let's come to contributory factors, those that stood out in terms of what we found. You'll ask yourselves how we establish what contributory factors play a role, more especially in terms of road link, because the question was around road link. What we found in through our accident investigations was that the most leading cause of these accidents is human factors. And amongst others, the following human factors were identified. The first one was mostly fatigue, which can probably be attributed to long hours of driving by these drivers. The second one was driver error. For instance, some drivers were found to have inappropriately positioned their buses on the road, and sometimes overreaction to incidents. I mean, overreaction has a lot to do with fatigue in most cases. If you remember the previous slides that I presented, there was also an indication of an increase in the use, in the exceeding of alcohol limit at night. And if you are intoxicated, the likelihood of you overreacting in the face of incidents is also very high. So those are some of the things that we've identified. In terms of factors, road and environmental factors, there was none identified attributed to these accidents. Same to vehicle factors. So they were, despite all of those weaknesses in the buses that I spoke to when I started, with the investigations that we conducted on RoadLink, we did not find any vehicle factors associated with these accidents. Now, the issue, what are we doing to address all these problems? If you remember when we started, I spoke to accidents within the busing industry, of which RoadLink is one. And the interventions that I'll be talking to now will not just apply to RoadLink. We are going to apply them across the spectrum because we feel, in view of the large numbers buses transport, the likelihood of increasing severity, more especially in terms of fatalities, in instances where accidents happen, it is very high. So we just have to make sure we minimize accidents, more especially when it comes to buses. The first intervention that we are currently sitting with is we have targeted law enforcement on buses, and this we conduct through mini roadblocks, at amongst others, stopping and service areas on major routes to check driver and vehicle fitness. What I also need to emphasize to the chairperson and members of the committee is that this, as you know, the role of RTMC is not the actual execution of law enforcement activities, but coordination thereof. The reason why the CEO is not here, we have this meeting that we arranged with HODs because we felt we need to come together so that when we execute law enforcement operations, we think from the same book. We know which offenses to prioritize, which is why he's not here. That is why he was just caught off guard when the invitation came so late. So it's about to make sure that the coordination, both metros and provinces, do focus on identified offenses that are mostly attributed to high fatality rates, mostly attributed to occurrence of accidents, let us say crashes in general. But of course, in this case, we have targeted law enforcement focusing specifically on buses, and these check driver and vehicle fitness. Because as you might have seen when I started, driver issue of driver fitness, the fact that people tend to abuse alcohol is a problem. The fact that some drivers were found not to have PRDP is a problem. They are not fit to be on the road. The fact that drivers, for instance, in the case of RoadLink, were found to have fatigue problems, they are not fit to be on the road. That is why there is a need to focus squarely on these problems, so that we are able to solve the problem. The second intervention is the implementation of the Traffic Law Enforcement Code. One of the reasons why the CEO met the HODs is because we want to institutionalize the implementation of this code, because this will improve the working conditions of officers. It will enable metros, it will enable provinces to set targets for a law enforcement officers in terms of, for instance, number of buses that they need to stop and check offenses that are found to be associated with fatal crashes or any form of crash, bus-related crash for that matter, just for the purpose of this presentation. We are also conducting an analysis of native data on all bus companies to determine the level of compliance in terms of roadworthiness of buses, because we need to establish there is sometimes a tendency out there where people rebuild vehicles for reuse and to transport the public, which is not safe at times because some of these vehicles are no longer roadworthy enough to transport passengers. So we have to check the status in terms of roadworthiness in that regard. We also check driver fitness in terms of licensing. Are these people licensed to drive these buses? Do they have valid driver's licenses? We are also on a regular basis. What as you know, one of the mandates of RTMC is accident investigation and recording. We've got accidents that we've categorized as needing close investigation. Those are accidents where at least 5 people lose their lives or at least 2 vehicles get involved. Those for us warrant in close investigation so that we can establish the causes of the accident. And we upon completion of each investigation, we put together a report to SAPS, a report to the affected local authority, a report to the affected province with recommendations in terms of interventions that they need to implement, be it engineering-related interventions, be it law enforcement, be it education. So that and what we normally do as the next activity follows, in the letters that we send to provinces and local authorities, we request that after 3 months, they provide us with feedback in terms of how far they've gone implementing the recommendations that we forward to them through the correspondences in terms of factors that we established through our investigations. And we, through the profiling that we are doing, through the analysis of the native data, it enables us, it will enable us to identify regular offending bus operators, and we will recommend those for interviews and possible intervention by ministers, both at provincial and national level, as required by the National Road Traffic Act. And those are the interventions that we are currently working on. And Chairperson, this brings us to the end of the presentation that we prepared as RTMC. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I will now open the meeting for questions of authority and comments. Honorable Ngele, followed by Honorable Farouk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Whatever remarks or questions I ask, take me as a regular passenger of the SAJ. I stay in Swami, and my family is in the Eastern Cape in Mthatha, one of the roads of the SA Link. might say it was very popular in the beginning for the reasons that it was very cheap compared to other buses and very fast. I'm saying fast because we would leave Pretoria at 4 o'clock, scheduled to arrive in Umtata at about 7, but believe you me, 5 o'clock would be in Umtata. Not very fast, the South African Road Link. I agree, Chairperson, that one of the reasons of the accident was this fatigue. And at that time, there was one driver. And that was, it was first driven by foreign whites, because the English, they would talk in the bus, it was fun. This driver would leave Pretoria to Umtata and take passengers the same day back to Pretoria. They were always in a rush trying to cover. I used to like the South African Road Link, really. It was a smart bus. But now, if Chairperson, they say, they check the bus, they stop and check these buses, maybe it's the days that I'm not there. But ever since I have traveled to that bus, we never stopped anywhere to be checked. It was just. But the other time, there were two drivers in that bus. And it went on nicely, swiftly, as if we were in a Greyhound bus. Because that one, Greyhound, I recommend that bus. But we left Greyhound because of the cheapness of the South African Road Link. One other accident, I don't know. It was the negligence of the bus driver. Because he drove to where he was going to fill in the bus with petrol. And he didn't gauge, it was a double-story bus, usually they drive double-story the same. He didn't gauge the top of the bus. And can you believe that the whole top was ripped off and people were just left like this? Nobody was hurt. But it was topless. You see, I'm telling you the truth. And they had to drive because people were desperate coming to work in that. But I will always say that bus, there is something worse than the reasons that we are getting. Because it is the only one. I'm surprised that there are few accidents. Or maybe it's because it has just started. Or more translats and more the other persons have been there. But it is a new bus. Maybe that is why the rate of accidents is new. And buses traveling at night, that shouldn't be a reason. As I am saying, all other buses have more than one driver. That's what they do. One starts from Johannesburg or Pretoria, and at certain stage, you leave the bus to go and sleep at the back. And one other thing that I've noticed, the seat at the back that they are supposed to be sleeping on, they put more people. Whether they are gaining something or they get that money for themselves. But you find out, if the driver stops driving, there is nowhere for him to go and sleep. That seat is occupied by passengers. That is what I have noticed. And I've mentioned fatigue, I've mentioned stopping buses and bus traveling at night. There is something that we don't know as passengers that is happening in that bus between the company and the driver. But these reasons that you are giving us, I really don't take them as a reason. But the other buses also, like I say, they use that route as well. But why is it that they don't have that much accidents? Thank you.
Honorable Paul.
Thank you very much, Chair. First of all, if I could just say that I'm not very happy with this report. I'll tell you why. Because you've listed here a whole series of bus companies, which there's many, many more, but some of them are urban. In other words, they're running between here and there. And every bump or accident they have is reported. So you have got very high values associated to the golden arrows of the world, the Patka, because there are numerous fleets. There's a big fleet compared to what we are talking about here. If you look at it in relativity, in terms of so many buses against so many accidents, you're going to start picking up a trend. Let me tell you now. We don't have autopacks in here, which is one of the biggest city-to-city operations in this country. Translux. Now, I don't know why that's been excluded. It might be a government entity, but at the end of the day, they are taking people, and there are people's lives that are staking those buses. So I look at this first report of yours, and I say that you need to come back to us, and you need to break it up between long distance and urban, and you have to incorporate some of those other ones. And then let's also look at it in terms of fatalities. Because this is why we are here. One life being lost on a bus, to me, is, you know, enough to be able to call you here to come and report as to why. And I want to ask you then the next thing. If you look at what my colleague has just been talking about, the one issue, the team, do you have inspectors, as you have got the power to have in terms of the National Land Transport Act, I don't know where they are sitting at this point, to go there and to actually go to the depot before the bus even has the ability to move out of that thing to ensure that A, its lights are working, B, its brakes are working, and C, that there is a logbook there with a co-driver which you can actually at the end of the day say to that person, when did you change shift with the last driver? So we can monitor, in terms of the Occupational Safety Act, how long these drivers are driving for. Because I promise you one thing, irrespective of the rumors that there was a change taking place while the driver was driving of this accident here, in other words, in situ, people are actually getting out of the seat and changing instead of stopping and doing it at certain places. That is a rumor. We haven't had it proved yet. But at the end of the day, people lost their lives. Now I want to come to the next point, which I want to talk about. You know, the inspectorate is one where you can stop this happening at the depot. The bus should not even leave the depot if there's anything wrong with it. And I want to know from you how closely you are liaising with the operating licensing boards in terms of ensuring that there's no driver that doesn't have a PDR, that there is no route that bus is on that it shouldn't be on. Now, in the Western Cape here, when this accident took place, I was in touch with my colleague in the province here, and he said, what do we do? I said, what do we do? We actually do what we should be doing, go and put the cops out there and stop them coming in. Any bus, not only Road Link. In 1 week, we stopped something like 50 or 60 buses. I even met the inspector here in Cape Town who did that job. And you would be unbelievably shocked to know what was wrong with those buses. They might mean minor, but there are little things that are going wrong with all these buses that shouldn't even happen if they're on the road and they're taking our passengers with them and putting them in danger. I don't believe we've seriously looked at this issue as we should. I want to know what is going on there at that particular company, but I also want to know what's happening in other companies. And you need to break this thing up for us so that we can see it in terms of fatalities and see it in terms of the number of buses per in that company. If there's protectionism in there, we also want to know that. And I would appeal that maybe you let us know who the directors of the company are. Last but not least, these buses in this country here are getting older by the day. We need to have an analysis of their age, because I don't care how long you can weld up a chassis and how long that bus survives for another road trip. We have got to look at now saying to them, sorry, my friend, recapitalization or no recapitalization or no refurbishment, that bus is off the road like they do in every other country in Europe. So I'm appealing to you to get us those type of information, because if we need to, Madam Chair, do something about it, maybe here at this level, we should enforce it. And if it needs putting in some legislation or regulations to do this and to give you the power to do your job, we will do it. That's what we're here for. But we cannot afford to lose another life. The Road Accident Fund cannot afford to pay out another claim. And that is your job. I see your job as education, as enforcement, accreditation, so every cop in this country knows what to do and how to do it and what he's going to go about it. And then liaison with your stakeholders in the province to ensure that they undertake those exercises. The other concerning thing that I have is that while our enforcers were doing their job in the Western Cape, These buses knew about it, and they were now going around these roadblocks and diverting around. What does that tell me? It tells me someone's got something to hide. When you go around a roadblock, if a bus goes in there with confidence knowing that there's nothing wrong with it, nothing will happen. But we are living with this every day. We cannot afford, with the World Cup coming up in another 297 days, that we have these type of accidents with tourists on board. Please, for Jacob Medici's sake and for all of our sake, please, 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 let's get this thing sorted out, Madam Chair, before we even go beyond it. And statistics are not going to save lives. You can do what you want. You can manipulate statistics in such a way, but it's not going to save lives. We want to actually know what we're going to do about all this thing. I'll leave it there for the while, and I'd like to come back later.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by thanking the presentation that has been made to the committee. I think now we're aware of the roles and responsibility of the road traffic management corporations. Chair, I think I've got just a few questions to ask. Number one, the issue of the survey that you have mentioned, whether the survey is being done by certain internal activity of the TMC or is it outsourced? Then secondly, viewing the issue of non-compliance, because when looking at the report, the major challenge is the non-compliance. Any buses of vehicles that have been put on hold or been scrapped out of the road to really ensure that road users comply with the rules and regulations of our roads. Then the other one is on the issue of the number of unroadly vehicles that is increasing. I think I go through one of the reports of the department, or it's your own report, whereby you said you've got lots of traffic officers. While we've got a number of traffic officers on the other side, there's an increasing number of unroadworthy vehicles. What is the challenge according to your own analysis? Is it a capacity problem or what? Then the other one, there's this slogan, don't drink and drive. But here, when you report, you're telling us about the drivers who are exceeding the alcohol limit. Do you mean that drivers have got the right to drink, but they must not exceed the limit? Can you clarify that? Because if we're saying don't drink and drive, we are saying no driver must take alcohol when driving. But if we are reporting about the drivers who are exceeding a certain limit, in other words, according to my own understanding, we are saying the drivers can drink, but they must not exceed a certain limit. What is it really that we are preaching, also the department and also the corporation? Then, on drivers without the professional driving permit, who is being charged? Is it the driver or both the driver and the owner of the bus? Then the impact of duty. The driver of the year, what do we call it? Driver of the year competition. The impact that it has in dealing with some of the challenges that you have mentioned in your report. You have mentioned something about the National Traffic Code. Is this code in place? Have we started to implement this code? Because according to my understanding, I was being told long ago about this code while I was in the province, that there's this code, the National Traffic Code, that is being initiated at the national level. We're still talking about the code. At what stage is this code? Then the issue of the accident investigations and recording. Are the provinces responsible for investigation, or is it you who is responsible for investigation, or is the service provider? You have outsourced the task of the investigation. The other thing you've mentioned, the issue of the one of the documents, I've realized that you've got the challenge of recording the accident. What plans are in place to deal with that particular challenge? Because if we don't have the reliable stats of the accidents that are taking place in our country, it means that our plans also will take a different direction. What plans are in place to ensure that really we've got the accurate data of the accidents that are taking place? Because if we talk of the National Accident Register, the National Accident Register, maybe you can just brief us about that, and also the plans that are in place to make sure that really the stats on the accidents that are taking place is being reliable and accurate. Then the last one, Chair, is the issue of the recommendations that you're making to provinces. I don't think that we must keep on making recommendations, but after the recommendations, we have to monitor the implementation of those recommendations, so that at the end of the day, we make an assessment whether those recommendations are making any change with regard to the reduction of the accidents that are taking place. To what extent, then, are you monitoring the implementation of those recommendations that you are making to the province? I don't know whether it's the last one. You know, in your report, you talk about the interviews that the operators are having with the minister. Can you just tell us, just briefly, the impact of those interviews? Then after the interviews, what happened? Because I understand the operators having the interviews with the minister, then what? After those interviews. And also maybe to brief the committee with regards to the issue, because somewhere, somehow, you talk about the use of the, that you initiate something like the pocket computer. Yes, the TOPS one, something like the TOPS, the traffic officer, what? Do we have those computers? Have you started with that concept? And if you've started, is there any progress with regard to the particular program? Thank you, Chair.
I gave to Chief Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll just request that you allow us to take turns answering the questions. I'll just start with a very one on coming from Honorable Member Ngele. One of the leading causes of fatal accidents that we've established thus far through our investigations is speed. And unfortunately, our consumers, when it comes to transport, also see speed as one of the requirements in terms of acceptable level of utility when it comes to transport. And I think that has implications when it comes to issue of educating the public, that if a driver exceeds speed, it's not acceptable. They must not even allow themselves to travel in such a bus. And that takes education, targeted education for that matter, to address such. So I concur with you. It's true that one of the reasons why people go for Roadlink or whatever other bus operator has more to do with speed, because they want to be at their destination as quickly as possible. I know of buses that are running between Johannesburg and somewhere in Limpopo. They are given a star rating for that very reason, because when they leave at 7, 8 o'clock, by 12 o'clock they've arrived. And I always look at people bragging about that speedy arrival at their destination and the risk that goes with it when it comes to their own safety. So it takes education, I think that we need to have an intervention that squarely looks at issues of education in relation to speeding, but especially when it comes to buses. I'm just checking. The issue of the drivers. There is one of the bus accidents that we've investigated. It remains still being established by our investigators, because what seemed to be coming out in that bus is that the bus driver, as you rightfully said, traveled from Johannesburg to Durban or Cape Town. And because it was a very busy season, that December Hyperdin accident in KZN. Because it was a very busy season, the driver had to drive back to Johannesburg because there were many people. And that brings in the issue of fatigue. The question is, was there a dedicated co-driver in that bus? Which is something that remains a question which we are still trying to establish. So those factors we are looking at, because we need to have a kind of well-informed interventions when we have to do those visits to a bus operator's site, so that we know exactly what we are looking at. We need to have checklists. As honorable member, Mr. Farrow indicated, we cannot just sit outside and say these people will comply. We also have, in line with legislation, visit these people, check that they comply in terms of the log sheet, they comply in terms of co-drivers, they comply in terms of roadworthiness of those vehicles that they are carrying, transporting people in. And those we just have to do. And we've started moving towards that direction. That is why we have that analysis. It's a way of profiling operators so that we know which ones to visit, prioritize in terms of our visits. And I'll just hand over to my colleague, Mr. Botha, to come in as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'll just start off where Dr. Manyana left, and then looking at some of the first questions that was raised. I think he's covered some of the issues. But I would just like to emphasize, if I may, please, Madam Chair, need to inform the committee that as it is this case, the RTMC has only got basically 5 of its 10 envisaged functions. And those that have not been established in the corporation as yet include, amongst others, vehicle registration and licensing, roadworthiness and testing of roadworthiness of vehicles, we still don't have, testing and licensing of drivers, amongst others, which is relating to this issue. However, as this planned by the CEO, at the meeting of the shareholders committee, planned for transport month, October, to request the shareholders committee to now also provide for the establishment of these functions within the corporation. Because that will then provide us with the mandate, if you like to call it that, to now start playing our full role in this regard, to look at the vehicle roadworthiness, testing and licensing of drivers and so on. And amongst others, we are looking for all three of these functions also in cooperation with the department, particularly because the roadworthiness, testing and so on of vehicles is at this stage a legislated function of the South African Bureau of Standards. I know that the department is also looking at maybe bringing that function over to the department, but there we will have to negotiate what is the role of the RPMC then be in that regard. But as it stands at this stage, we plan to take full responsibility for that. Now, I can just also mention very important two tools that we are looking at that would empower the RPMC to fulfill its role and also to effect better cooperation and coordination between the RPMC and the provinces and the metros and the local authorities. Firstly, the approval of the current draft 2009-2015 Road Traffic Safety Management Plan. Because we went through great lengths to prepare that, a six-year program covering all functional areas in road traffic management, identified the responsibilities of the corporation, identified the responsibilities of the provinces, of even SACs, other role players. So once that is approved, we will have then a blueprint, as our CEO likes to call it, which will give us then a full program of what will be expected of everybody. And I think a lot of the issues, which I'll go into a little bit more detail, will be incorporated in that. And then also going, maybe jumping slightly to the back, but I think I need to mention it at this stage, is very important, which the Road Traffic Management Corporation Act provides for, is the development, introduction, publication of the National Road Traffic Law Enforcement Code. Very important document, because the Act also provides for the corporation then to enter into performance agreements with the traffic authorities on their performance in terms of this code. Now, this code, unfortunately, is in the final draft, and that will also be submitted to the shareholders committee for final approval, hopefully at the meeting scheduled for October month. Because once we have that, we will be able then to set performance. One of the important issues to my mind, road safety, there's many role players. But the biggest role player that can make the biggest impact is law enforcement, inspectorate, continuous. That is then supported by communication and whatever. But if our enforcement and control and management is not up to scratch, then we're not strong enough to do that. So if we can get those issues in place, then a lot of these issues, like, for example, as Dr. Mariano mentioned, in terms of the law enforcement code, because what we plan at this stage, for example, is for each and every traffic officer to, on a daily basis, stop and check a minimum of 14 vehicles and 14 drivers, and even to break that down. So they don't just stop light vehicles, but they will have a target of, say, each and every individual officer stop at least, for example, three buses, three trucks, two motorcycles, or whatever the case may be, so that we ensure that they do stop and check driver fitness for alcohol, seatbelt, driving license, professional driving permit, all of that, and check on the roadside those things that can be easily checked. If there's things that they suspect that is wrong that they can't check easily at the roadside, for example, steering wheel and so on, that they then be taken to the testing station. What we're also looking at is some of the weighing stations, like the big weighing stations next to the roadway, and even some of the service areas on the N1, the NGN1 stops and so on, where we can also provide them with roadside facilities where they can check the more difficult issues on vehicles. And in this regard, I think I can just mention that we've entered into negotiations with Sunrail for the open toll road system in Gauteng, where they will have 30 mobile locations on the 145 kilometers of freeway, where they would like the RPMC to organize on their behalf continuous enforcement on the toll road. And I think that will also provide the corporation with the opportunity to take that as an example to extend to other roads. Also, looking at the major provincial roads, but as Mr. Farrow pointed out, once you do something on a major road, roads that need to hide something, immediately they take to the side road. And therefore, we need to have plans to look at the so-called escape routes as well. Then just maybe something very briefly that I would like to mention is that the International Standards Organization called together a committee, which Dr. Mariana and myself attended earlier this year, which is called the Road Traffic Safety Management International Standards Organization System, which is very much a link to our, which was developed by the CSIR in South Africa, mainly for self-regulation on overloaded vehicles. But this, we'd like to take it further to look at safety and self-regulation with regard to getting companies to buy into and then be registered by the International Standards Organization. So that is also another avenue that, okay, that is cosmetics or maybe the processes and so on. So what we need to look at is the hard stuff on the road. But then maybe moving on to Mr. Farrow's issues. Just to come back to the first question, again, is this checking. So part of the law enforcement issue, and which is on the agenda also with the CEO's meeting with the HODs today, is there's no law enforcement at night time. They start at 9 in the morning, go home at 4 o'clock. There's no law enforcement over weekends. And in order to stop and check, because these long-distance searches mainly travel overnight from one spot to the other spot. So we need to have law enforcement in those days, and they are looking at the remuneration conditions of traffic officers and also to get them declared as an essential service. So they then have the power to undertake their law enforcement actions at night time. And when they have these mini roadblocks that Dr. Mariana mentioned, is that they must then stop and check and see if there is passengers in the seat, which is or the bench, which is provided for the driver to take a nap, and also to see if there is a co-driver on that bus. I think that is those issues. Mr. Farrow, the table that you referred to, there was actually a whole list of bus companies, and we didn't take the whole lot. And right at the bottom, you would have noticed, and those are the companies actually with the smaller number of crashes. And I think we also accept that we need to do a breakdown between the long distance buses and the local buses. Pardon, sir. Based on the short notice that to do the preparation was a bit difficult in extracting the information for that purpose. We have done an analysis of the age of buses. I have it on my computer somewhere. But anyway, we'll make sure that we get that info. We looked at the change from 2006 to 7 to 8, and yes, it is getting older. I think the average age of buses countrywide now is in the order of about 13 years. The average age of all vehicles is in the order of 10, buses in the order of 13. And what I pointed out to Dr. Mariana, which is interesting, I think the problem with the younger fleet is actually Western Cape. I think the average age of their buses is in the order of about 9. But if you're interested in the other slides, I can just quickly look at that slide. I think we do take note of closer liaison with the operating board. And also, on maintenance, there is information available on operating licenses. And we need to bring that into the total equation when we do this type of analysis to get more detail, particularly on minibus taxis, buses, as well as trucks. Because trucks play also a major role. And many times when there is a bus involved, there's also a truck involved. And we need to work out the total link between that. Moving on to these questions by Ms. Nombila, the traffic offense survey, that is outsourced by an independent company who was then appointed. The previous company did the survey for us for a period of 3 years. Dr. Mariana is at the moment looking at now preparing bids and inviting bids for the next year, because the current company, this is the last year that they're doing the offense surveys on a provincial basis, rather on an accurate
methodology. Yes, I think mentioned that non-compliance is a major challenge. The number of bus vehicles. There's two sources of info, basically, on the vehicle fitness issues. The one is NATIS, where we can check on the NATIS system, because certain vehicles need to go for compulsory checks on an annual basis, which is the so-called public passenger transport vehicles and freight vehicles, minibus taxis, buses, and trucks. And if they don't go, that is then reflected on NATIS, and that is where we get part of the information from. The other information through the independent traffic offense surveys that we do bring together. We are aware that the department is also looking at this stage on the possibility of the introduction of compulsory periodic vehicle testing for all vehicles. So I think in that regard we will be tightening down to the aging traffic fleet as well. And I think in that proposal would also be, instead of the current 1 year compulsory checking, is to look at the possibility of 2 times per annum. Drinking and driving, that remains a problem, particularly also from the legal side. And after won't resolve this problem, because alcohol is still regarded as being an offense and needs to go through the court system. Drawing blood and having blood samples checked is a problem, because of the laboratories, some of the samples getting mislabeled, misplaced, and so on, it takes a long time. So that is why we need to look at the reintroduction and motivation, communication, and I think there maybe we might need the assistance of this committee even to have a word with justice, so that we can, because it is legal, the drink alcohol, it is cheap, but some of the magistrates still don't accept it. They get the breast samples, but they still need blood samples as well. And that is where we experience major problems. And that we must try and promote the use of the breast alcohol, particularly at night time, as Dr. Mojana pointed out. Truck drivers, bus drivers, minibus taxi drivers, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that is when we find that they drive under the influence of alcohol. Then on the level of alcohol, at the time when it was finalized, there were major debates, because the original intention was to make it zero. And there was big arguments from the Department of Justice to say, no, you get wintertime, people have to take medicine. Medicine has got a small amount of alcohol in, so we can't make it zero. So that is why there's now the difference between ordinary drivers and the professional drivers. Their limit is lower, but still it is not zero. And as I mentioned, there was long debate on this, but I think it is at this stage acceptable, but because it was compared about 10, 15 years ago with blood alcohol levels, and with the drivers that we find involved in crashes. It is not only that they exceed this limit by so much, but generally they 4, 5, 6 times. I think the other day they caught a guy in KZN 10 times over the limit. And those are the issues that we need to concentrate on. The next one was on TDRP. Yes, under the current Criminal Procedures Act, it's only the drivers, thank you, John. Only the drivers, when they're caught without a professional driving permit, who get a fine. When R2 will be introduced, R2 provides for a whole list, actually, of offenses, vehicle offenses, driver offenses, where the driver will be fined, but automatically the operator will be fined as well. And one of these is PDRP. So if a driver is caught without a valid or expired PDRP, he or she will receive a notice, but automatically the same points, the same fine will go to the operator as well. And that is provided for under R2. Impact of doting. The impact at this stage is that the winner, as required by the corporation, must bring their share in attending schools, in attending some events that is organized by the corporation to go and convey their skills or skills transfer on how they drive that type of issue. And I don't know if you want to add something to that, but that is, as far as I can remember, is basically the only impact at this stage resulting from the Toti Driver of the Year competition. I think I've mentioned where we stand with the law enforcement code, which we regard as a very, very important document that we do now need to get finalized. It went through a whole series of consultations with various role players, and it is now a final draft that needs to be finally considered and approved so we can publish it as a regulation. Because once that is there, it allows the entering into specific performance agreements with individual traffic officers, and that is what we need. And they will be monitored in accordance with their performance, which is not currently the case. Accident investigations and recording. Basically, it's three sources of road accident information. The first is the general overall system, which is the responsibility of the South African Police Service. They have to fill in the four-page accident report form for all fatal, major, minor, and damage-only crashes and keep records on that. That is by far not comprehensive. Many instances, particularly in Mr. Farrow's area, dispatch and so on, we haven't had for years input from them because we can identify who submits regularly. We write letters, no response. But we are looking at a way to address that. The second source is directly from police stations. Sorry, the first issue is also via provinces and some local authorities who assist to collect the info, transfer them onto the accident register on NATIS. But that info is not reliable. The second source is for fatal crashes, which is in the order of about 1.5 of all crashes on an annual basis. There we collect information directly from police stations, only on fatal crashes, which gives us summarized information, but also with the indication on the contributory factor, either human, vehicle, or road. That we compare with the SAPS CAS system to check and control and verify and throw out duplicates, and also to assist each other because sometimes we receive info on our system, which is not on their system, and then there's crashes on their system, which is not on our system. That only deals with fatal crashes, and that is more or less the most accurate. I would say case very roughly more than 99% accurate. Then we undertake special individual accident investigations, which is done by a private sector service provider or provider. Dr. Mojana has got a team of about four or five, three currently different companies at this stage, which is on a 24-hour standby. And the reasons when we do that, because of the cost implication, because a very detailed investigation is done for all of these crashes, of which there are in the order of about 160 per year, which complies with the following conditions. Either five or more persons killed the crash, four or more vehicles involved, which resulted in a fatality, or crashes involving hazardous materials. And as I said, there's an order of about roughly 160 of these per year. Up to now, we've investigated about 50%. And we plan to increase that to cover actually all of these, which is in depth, even what the driver did 2 days ago, when did he leave the house, the vehicle, the organization, the operator. So it is a very comprehensive report to get us a full idea of the issues. And I think I've covered the issue on the reliability of statisticians, of statistics. Recommendations to provinces, we have a bit of a problem because we don't always get feedback. Reminders are sent through to say that we have submitted you this report with these recommendations, What is progress? And then we wait another month, no feedback from the provinces. We write another letter and no response. And that is something we need to work on, and I think that is also the issue particularly for the shareholders committee and in consultation with MINMAC. Because one of the problems that we also experience is that some provinces have got two different departments. One dealing with traffic issues and another one dealing with public works and roads. And roads is then dealt with by another MEC, which is not covered necessarily by the shareholders MEC or the representative from the shareholders committee. And but there we need to find out how we can resolve these problems. In terms of the interviews with the ministers, the National Road Act, Traffic Act, Section 82, provides for the minister and or the MEC, as Dr. Miana pointed out, to appoint an inspectorate, go into the premises of a specific operator that it is felt needs to be investigated. Now, there we do have the info either on the NATER system or through the annual traffic offense survey where the operator's names and the buses' names and so on is recorded. And then based on that report, the minister or the MEC can then call in the operator and then have a one-on-one talk with him and say, look, this is the general problem that we find with your vehicle. So that is the follow-up that can be done in that regard. Oops, where are we? Chairperson, then I think the last issue is on the status of traffic officer pocket computers. I think that is Dr. Moyana's responsibility, and he can possibly conclude in the response. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll start. In fact, there are three issues which Mr. Botha spoke to. I would like to make additions in terms of those. But before I go to those, I'll just move straight to the issue of introduction of TOPS. We call them TOPS. We are currently in the process of finalizing of our procurement because we need to procure those handheld computers for officers. So we are currently working on our procurement processes in that regard, and it's on track. The prototype has been developed. We also have some few of those that have been programmed already. So all what is left is for us to have both the hardware as well as the software made to work so that these can be deployed to officers for use. I would also like to add regarding, there was a question from Honorable Member Boho regarding what we are doing to improve accident data. We've completed the development of an accident capturing system, which will enable us to have real-time access to, in fact, close to real-time access to accident information. We are currently in negotiations with SAPS so that we can get started with the piloting of the project itself. Once piloted for at most 6 months, the plan is to roll it out nationally, because our view is that the entry point of accident data is police stations, and if capturing can happen at that level, we feel that will improve, because things tend to fall through the cracks as they move from one office to the next. And if we capture them at that entry level, we think quality and completeness will improve. And we've completed developing that system. Regarding the issue, as Mr. Botha indicated, we are currently looking at about 30% of major accidents in the country in terms of investigation. But in view of the fact that we cannot just appease ourselves because we are able to keep proper records of statistics, what we should derive satisfaction from is saving lives. We've as a result embarked on a process of establishing for the current financial year an in-house accident investigation unit as well, just to to enable us to cast the net wider in terms of covering the accidents. So apart from the outsourced activities, we are currently working on establishing an in-house accident investigation unit, and we see that as an opportunity for skills transfer as well, because we need to have in-house skills. And that is what we are doing in that one. I think the very third and last one, in terms of what I wanted to speak to, is what came from Honorable Member Farrell regarding looking into the statistics, more especially in line with fatalities, because currently we've covered the statistics in terms of bus accidents. But the question is, which ones result in life loss? Because that is the main focus. Even though we know that even accidents can culminate at the end in life loss, but those that have high severity rate, more especially in relation to fatalities, those are the ones that we need to look squarely on. And I think the reason why RoadLink drew everybody's attention, including the committee, is because of the high number of fatalities. And that is what we'll go back and make sure we zoom into. In fact, there is a process already underway to that effect. And that's what I just wanted to bring to the attention of the committee, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Honorable Members. I just want to make it to add on. Perhaps it's also important to mention to the Portfolio Committee that yes, there are legislative challenges, in particular with regards to provisions dealing with inquiries on empowering the RTMC to deal with inquiries on operations. And just to mention that we are currently in the process of proposing some amendments in those areas. And with the support of the committee, we may be in a position, through our national department, in a position to table some proposal on legislative amendments next year.
Thank you very much. This will be the first time that I will have so many questions to ask from the chair. Not usually the case, but I have many, many questions to ask. And I think that we will need a follow-up meeting on this one, because also not all the questions that we would want to ask will be asked today. First of all, I must register that this meeting was just an icebreak type of a meeting to introduce both the Portfolio Committee and the delegation to issues that we would need to focus on in dealing with matters of road accidents. And as we continue to meet, we will then arrive at what intervention is needed from the portfolio side as legislators, and what intervention and improvement could be done from the entity side. And I think that we should also look at whether the laws that we have are biting enough to prevent problems from occurring. Is it the laws that are not biting or the implementation of such that causes the problem? We will need to analyze that as legislators and arrive at a decision of saying, if it is the laws that are not biting, what laws we could put in place, pieces of legislation that we could propose that would be biting enough to prevent this problem from happening. And if it is the implementation that is not to satisfaction, what intervention, again, shall be put in place as legislators to ensure that the implementation of the existing laws, if they are biting enough, is actually done. And there are many ways of looking at this. One issue that I have is whether we are implementing preventive measures or we are reacting to situations in terms of the laws that we have and the implementation processes and interventions that we put in place. Because if you can't differentiate between preventing a situation from occurring and reacting to a situation that has already occurred, we will always find ourselves running after instead of preventing things from happening. I am asking this question because I am also a licensed driver. I got my license in 1986. And each time I go to renew a license, my eyes are checked to establish whether I can still see. So it is not the license that is renewed. It is the person holding the license that is actually being assessed, whether that person is still fit to hold a license. It is not the same when I renew the license of my car. I go to a licensing department with a piece of paper and present that piece of paper and money on the license that's renewed. Without having assessed the car, whether it is still roadworthy or whether it is still there. That to me is a big problem. That I would be assessed as the license holder, driving license holder, to assess my fitness. Because if I'm no longer fit, then the license will not be renewed. If I'm no longer fit to drive, my license will not be renewed. But in the car, the license gets renewed. Having not assessed the fitness of the car, and I find that not being consistent. I am fit to drive because I'm assessed, I'm issued with the license. The car that I'm driving is not assessed. And it is the car also that sometimes causes an accident. The roadworthiness of the car, that's the report, it says that. And I think we will need to find one another on that, as to whether we are doing the right thing to renew licenses of cars that we have not assessed, whether they are still roadworthy. We'll need to revisit that. The other issue is the issue of the speed limit. It comes up in this report that some accidents are caused by the fact that the speed limit of this country would be exceeded when people are driving. That then brings us to how we can prevent that from happening. Why do car manufacturers produce cars that can be driven at 280 kilometers when the allowed speed limit is 120? Are they not part of us? Are they not part of the solution? Isn't that one way of tempting people to exceed the speed limit? Is there no technology that could be put, particularly in public transport, to lock the speed at the allowed speed limit of the country? And for that to happen, are legislators not maybe required to look at that, to come up with ways that would prevent things from happening rather than react on what has already happened. The other issue that comes up in this, I thought maybe you would read where we are coming from when you were preparing this presentation to say, why are we singling out RoadLink? It's because RoadLink has resulted with many deaths. When an accident happens of a RoadLink bus, too many lives are lost. And I would have expected that in addition to the number of accidents and the percentage, there would also be statistics in relation to how many people died. Because our issue here is the loss of life as a result of an accident. First and foremost, it is the loss of life. The second issue is the disability as a result of an accident. The third issue is the disruption that occurs on the road, impacting on other road users because an accident has happened. People would miss their appointments, people would arrive late at work, other cars would also get involved in an accident because of one or two cars that collided. So that to us is an issue because we are here as representatives of the public to ensure that what is done by one person doesn't impact negatively on the next person. So the issue of the number of accidents has an impact on other road users, a very negative impact, and we would want also to hear about that. Unfortunately, the issue of death that occurred as a result of a particular service provider are not part of this presentation, and we would like to see that next time. The question that I have is that you are talking about the driver fitness in your presentation. But there is nothing that tells us how many drivers per bus informed by the distance that the bus has to travel from point A to point B and the number of hours traveled by the bus. Like, for instance, if the situation that was explained here, that a bus driver, there would be two bus drivers, and one bus driver would be seated at the back, expected to sleep in a noisy bus full of passengers with a radio and everything, meaning that that person is not sleeping. Maybe if companies had a different way of dealing with that, to have a driver halfway through who would be sleeping at home and then only go to the point of assuming driving and relieve the other driver. We don't have that information as to how, if the bus is called drivers, how is that implemented. Because you see, bus operators are profit driven. They would want to employ as few people as possible so that they can make huge profit as possible. So to them, if there is no law that forces them to do things, they would not do those things. And we want to have a very clear picture so that we can begin to play our role of putting relevant legislation that deals with the problem. That's why we want a well-detailed presentation, which will give us a very clear picture so that we can begin to see whether we need to put in place a legislation that would force the bus operators to do the right thing. I also think that we don't have a picture that tells us how many bus companies have lost their operating licenses as a result of them being involved in accidents. Whether the accident was a result of the driver or the unroadworthiness of a bus, but surely there should be a binding law which will force the companies to act and prevent the situation from occurring. Are there any bus companies that have been blacklisted for recording the highest accidents and killing many passengers? Or we do have the statistics that this company gets involved in these accidents, but it ends there. We don't blacklist them. So that if there is nothing that is being done to bite on them, we can begin to look at ways in which we could effect that as legislators. I think I read in one of the newspapers that there is now technology in place that can be fitted in a vehicle to prevent a driver that has exceeded the alcohol limit from actually starting a car. I read that in the newspaper. Is that too expensive of a device to have a legislation forcing a car manufacturing company to have that in all the vehicles that are operating on the roads of this country, so that we can prevent this thing of drivers that would drink? There are many drivers than officers on the road. So it would not be possible for officers to check each and every driver that is behind the wheel, whether that driver has exceeded the alcohol limit. But there is technology available that can do that on behalf of the officer and prevent that situation from happening. Again, the issue of blacklisting. I was hoping that there would be a link in the intervention of the demerit system to accident prevention, because that would result with a situation where people that do not have licenses or public driver's permits or have exceeded alcohol or are speeding would gradually be taken off the system. they would be blacklisted. I thought maybe in the intervention there would be a link with that to say when can we begin to see that happening. But also, there is another issue that one would want to understand. Is the issue of alcohol in driving as a result of the licensing and trading hours of those that are trading in alcohol? Would it help to reduce the number of hours of trading in alcohol, or to limit the licenses of people that are trading in alcohol? Would it help in reducing? Because when we do that, we would then be looking at the intergovernmental relations to look at what is done by another department that has got a negative impact on the other. I think I would stop there, but one last thing. In your slides, you presented a situation that differs from one province to the other in terms of the level of accidents and also in terms of the reduction of accidents. Is there a way in which you can unpack that in the next future? And in future, and elaborate as to what has been done by the provinces that have managed to reduce, how did they intervene, and what is lacking in the provinces that have not reduced, are still facing an increasing problem. Then, I don't know whether there is a problem between us and you. In your report, you are saying that no accidents are as a result of road. Is that what you are saying?
Those are just road link specific accidents in terms of those that we conducted investigations. It's not all the accidents that happen in the country. It's just those that have to do with RoadLink. If we were to have an opportunity, I think in future when we come, we'll have slides where we'll talk about causes, contributory factors in terms of accidents. You realize how road and environmental factors contribute in accidents. In fact, they contribute a great deal in terms of all the different accident types and fatalities as well. Thank you.
I think we would need to get that, because we would want to know the situation so that we can begin to effect change where possible. We are saying this because when we travel around the country, we travel a lot doing our constituency work, visiting different provinces. Hey, we are not pleased by what we see in terms of the infrastructure, road infrastructure. There are roads that were once good that have deteriorated with many potholes. I'm not going to say national or whatever, national roads, local roads, or district roads, but you know, what we see is a road, whether it is a responsibility of a local municipality, the bottom line is a road and cars travel on that road. And an ideal situation would be roads with no potholes. There are also roads that have not been improved. In a situation where traffic has increased, there are more people with cars now, but the road infrastructure. It takes more than an hour to travel from Acacia Park, where I live, to Parliament in the morning. A distance that is done in 20 minutes if it is done during the day. And surely, there will be accidents as a result of that. And the cost to that, if there is a traffic jam resulting with an accident, the cost is the road infrastructure. And we would want a situation where we are able to effect changes. I think I will stop there. And some of the questions you can respond to now, issues raised, and some need a follow-up to come back and say to us, this is not possible to do. Like the issue of the technology, to stop a car from moving if the person that is seated behind the steering wheel has exceeded the alcohol limits. We would need you to go and research that and come back to us and tell us whether it is possible, so that if it is possible, we would then effect the legislation that moves the country towards that direction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll just talk to the issue of infrastructure. What we normally find is that when we do accident investigations, there are accidents that happen as a result of road and environmental factors. And in instances where you find that it's more about engineering problems, what we normally say in our recommendations is for the province or the local authority to go and intervene in terms of engineering. Because sometimes you find that we've got a lot of accidents that are head-on. And it's mostly because the roads are very narrow. They haven't been improved in keeping with the increase in vehicle population, for instance. The roads do not have shoulder lanes. And as a result, they end up, because people cannot give way for the vehicles coming to the opposite direction, you end up with side swipes with either or head-on collisions. So what we normally do in that case is we make recommendations for local authorities or provinces to do interventions in traffic engineering related interventions mostly. And I think that's where I'll stop. Omkhere, you'll just take over.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Honorable Members. I'm John Mutsatsing from the Department of Transport. I'll touch base on the strategic interventions that the Department of Transport is currently implementing arising out of various accidents that we have occurred. The first one would obviously relate to the roadworthiness of motor vehicles, wherein we have approved that the current public transport, specifically buses, should go for a 6 month roadworthy testing. The legislative amendment still has to be submitted to the minister for signature, and thereafter it is going to be published. The second process out of that, we then to look at all the RTQS vehicles, which would then cover your freight vehicle, your ordinary vehicle, depending on the age of that particular motor vehicle. Wherein we currently, in terms of that process, are busy with a feasibility study to see if ever our current roadworthy test station would be able to cope with the number that would require roadworthy testing. In relation to public transport, we have also then looked at how we can implement speed governors for those particular type of transport. We are busy with the process of developing a specification that would deal with various speed governors in terms of which category of motor vehicles has to be fitted with a speed governor, which type of a speed governor has to be fitted, and to what extent would you allow for a variation of a speed of that motor vehicle depending on the type of road that that motor vehicle will be traveling in. The other strategic intervention basically would then relate to the fitness of drivers, wherein we are overhauling the entire process of an acquisition of a driving license, which would cover not necessarily also including a person requiring a professional driving permit, wherein we are going to say those drivers requiring a PRDP have, in addition to obtain their driving license, have to undergo a particular type of training for them to acquire that PRDP. We're also then looking at the issue of fatigue, which arises out of the various accidents that have occurred. The research that was done is obviously outdated. We are busy commissioning a new study to look at the impact of fatigue on all the drivers. Our utmost goal at this point would then be to look at the public transport vehicles, wherein in the interim, in the short term, we'll look at all the buses, we'll thereafter look at freight transportation, and thereafter go to ordinary motor vehicle. The question of how do you link your operating license to the driving hours. We still have to engage with labor in terms of how to ensure that we can have synergy between the labor inspectors in terms of regulating driving hours within a motor vehicle. We haven't looked at the question of alcohol detectors for now, although there have been processes in terms of saying some of the motor vehicles are fitted with alcohol detectors. We'll have to look at the practicality and the enforceability of alcohol detectors in ordinary operation of a motor vehicle. The other question that was raised is in terms of how then can we have synergy between the law enforcement agencies across the country. The RTMC have raised the issues regarding how that process can be facilitated. We have been trying since the implementation of the RTMC to ensure that that component done at local and provincial level can be shifted to the RTMC to ensure that we have targeted law enforcement. The unfortunate portion is that that function still resides with the MEC. And for us to allow the RTMC to do that, the MINMEC and the shareholders committee needs to agree to transfer that function to the RTMC. That is still going to be discussed. The question that was raised by Madam Chair in terms of alcohol trading, we will gladly appreciate that engagement between the committee and other intergovernmental organizations responsible for alcohol trading to ensure that such trading does not take place within certain hours. But to an extent that we have prohibited any advertising of alcohol along certain roads. But that does not necessarily mean that a distributor or a seller cannot trade with that alcohol. We are only then saying that a driver is not supposed to be seeing a sign that says 50 kilometers down the line there is a place that serves alcohol. I think for now, in terms of the strategic intervention, this is where our engagement as DOT in assisting this process will help solve a number of accidents that we have on our road. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Would you like to add?
In the interest of time, I will not elaborate any more than my colleague already did. But just to introduce Mr. John Mutsutsin from the department, he joined us later. He is, of course, heading road regulation at the department. And just for purposes of clarity, also for the benefit of new members to the portfolio committee, from a shareholder side, the RTMC is a different entity than any of the other entities in the Department of Transport because they report to a shareholder committee. That is why the name has been mentioned so many times. They do not report to the minister as all the other entities. They report to a shareholder committee consisting of the minister as chairperson, all the MECs and representatives from the local government. So when we are talking about functions to be transferred, we are talking about consensus to be reached between all these different parties, so that we can actually utilize this vehicle which we created as the RTMC properly. So when we talk about law enforcement, legislation, regulation, and then the implementation of these different strategies and plans that we've mentioned, the integration between the different provinces is extremely important. And in our next presentation, we will definitely highlight these issues to the portfolio committee so that we could really take hands to take on the challenges. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you. I would like to make a follow-up. Before I do that, let me thank the department for actually updating us, but we will find time to just interact with the department of on the strategic intervention strategy. I would like to make a follow-up on the question around the infrastructure and environmental-related accidents and the fact that it is usually a traffic engineering problem-related situation. And you are saying that you would recommend to the province or a local government to improve the situation. The question that I would want to pose is, what has been your experience in terms of implementing the recommendations that you make? Do do you receive the highest level of cooperation or low level of cooperation or no cooperation at all? So that we can begin to also find ways of ensuring that the issues of cooperative governance are actually effective and intergovernmental relations also is effective around those issues.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Our experience thus far is that the reason why we ended up with a 3-month turnaround for us to get feedback from institutions concerned is because we were not getting any form of cooperation, especially in terms of implementing our recommendations. And subsequent to that observation, we decided that in each letter we write to local authorities, to provinces, to SANRAL, if it's an international road-related issue, we make sure that we request to have feedback in terms of progress being made in implementing the recommendations after 3 months has expired upon receipt of the letter with recommendations. However, thus far, we are not getting much cooperation, which is why we are pushing for regular dialogue with provinces. It's one of the reasons why the CEO could not make it here. These are some of the things that we are looking at, because it's quite frustrating. We are spending a lot of money on the investigations, and valuable findings get unearthed through those investigations. However, that it takes forever for intervention, recommended interventions to be implemented. So there is minimal positive response in short. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Last comment, is it possible for you to provide this portfolio committee with the specific cases that you have investigated and recommended to both provincial and local government and indicate those that were responded to and an intervention was put in place and those that were not responded to and as a result there is no intervention that has taken place. And also an assessment of the intervention that was put in place of the impact of that. When an intervention was put in place, did it have a negative or a positive impact in addressing the problem? If we can get that information so that we can begin to push people in doing what they are supposed to do. Thank you. Honorable Faro, followed by Honorable Ngede and
thank you, Chair. I'm not going to be long. I just want to reiterate what the Chairperson said, and I think it relates to this, let's call it beast. it's a very unusual setup with the stakeholders and the MECs, and trying to get this thing moving has been a nightmare as long as I've been in this committee. But I think we've got enough teeth to be able to do some of the things that we have raised here. And my question to you, and maybe Dr. Kurtz, you could actually look at the legislation. We've put in place quite a lot of enactment which relates to the formation of the RTMC. I know that competencies that we've given them in terms of those 10 have not been fully implemented, but the Act still is there to enable them to go into a depot, I'm absolutely certain, or if it's not there, it's in the NPLA, the recent one which we've put into place, to enable somebody to go into a bus depot and say, listen, that bus is not going to leave here. It's got 4 tires. It's not going to leave this depot because we want to see whether your brakes have been tested in the last month or so. Am I not telling you that you cannot do that, or are you telling me you cannot do that? In other words, that you now have to rely on a minister who's a very busy person to create a suspension or appeal of that particular service. If so, I believe we have got an urgent crisis on our hands to sort out before the World Cup starts here. We've got 296 days. I would appeal, please, if there's a regulation, if there's a bit of legislation that you have that gives you the power to do these things, to do what the chairperson has asked, and to go in there and to put those interventions. For instance, is it impossible for you to go to RoadLink, to their management, and say to them, we want you to install or implement a system of a road, let's call it logbook, which relates to the taking over of a driver, which should be rested every 2 hours, by the way, on a road. A bus should stop and a driver should get out. Nobody has the concentration skills to drive for longer than that, or 3 hours. There is an Occupational Safety Act, which actually legislates for that. Use that piece to say to these drivers, you've got to stop and have mandatory stops on the road. You can also say to that depot or that bus owner, if you are really serious about the safety of your client, because after all, their client is using that and paying for their living, then you have a regular testing of a breathalyzer of that driver before he gets into the bus. And you record it in the logbook. The driver was tested and his alcohol level was clear. It's giving some safety precautions. The other thing about technology, simple technology, is to make it mandatory to have a tachometer in those buses to check whether the driver is exceeding speeds for any particular time or not. Now, we used to have those things. It's a simple thing, Madam Chair. We mandate and we put a mandatory enforcement or regulation in to say every bus has one of those machines. We have aircraft flying around this country with black boxes. We can tell exactly what happens if that accident occurs. Why can't we do it for this? Buses are carrying as many people as the aircrafts are carrying in the country. I just want to reinforce what you say. Please, let us get our act together. And if we've got the teeth, let's use it. And if there's something in there which doesn't give you the teeth, then we should be the first people to know, because that's our job. And I promise you, we'll sit here night and day, if we have to avoid any of these things happening, to get the regulations or, for that matter, think through. Finally, I just want to touch on something else, and that is the statistics. You know, there's a vast thing difference. I mean, Jacob shaking his head. You go and look at mortuary stats, and go and look at stats from RTMC. There is nearly 100% difference. My last check showed that 18,000 people were recorded as dead and died of a road motor accident in mortuary, compared to your 10,000 figures that you bring out annually, plus minus. Now, it raises the question. We've just legislated now for taxi accidents and everything to be incorporated. So I suspect the RAF will have every funeral cover that's taking place within the country. There's another area, and I don't know whether NATIS is tapping into it. But more importantly, when a person has an accident today and is seriously injured, the police do not go and find out if that person died 24 hours later, even 3 months later from that accident or the wounds that they incurred in that. We've got to actually get a picture in our mind the seriousness of this and what it is costing this economy every year. $49 billion, I think it was quoted by the minister in one of his speeches. That's what it costs us in terms of just having to hospitalize people, et cetera, et cetera. And finally, the top. I've raised this before. In the contract for Prediva, there was, and I'm talking about the first contract, those machines were to be provided by Prediva. Now we are going and buying our own machines again for the second time, which will effectively just tell me that we are wasting money or wasteful and fruitful expenditure again. We need to check it. I would like to see what that agreement implicated in terms of what they were meant to do and what they haven't done, and what we are now doing to actually get our traffic cops to at least have a record on as to what's happening. And as far as alcohol sales, I'd like you to go and check at the truck stop just outside of Port Elizabeth. They've got a bottle store in that truck stop. There, you're shaking your head to. We can't allow that. For a truck stop, people go in there, Madam Chair, to go and get refreshed. And they pull in there, the buses and everything, and they go and buy it. Now, what do we do? I'm sounding passionate and I'm sounding, you know, rather, you know, nervous, because I know that we have got to get this thing straightened up in less than 296 days. Please, I'm appealing to them to bring that stuff to us. If we have to sit here, we'll sit here at night to actually make sure we get this thing through fully.
The only issue I differ on with Honorable Faro is the 296 days, because that talks about other people that will be coming. I'm not saying it is not the right thing, but we have more responsibility to the citizens of this country. I would want to feel safe, my neighbors and everybody. It is very difficult to look at the eyes of offense as a result of a car accident. And that is what we live with in the country. So let us also be mindful of the fact that South African citizens deserve as good services as those that we are putting in place for 2010. 2010 should be a marketing platform of how our country treats its citizens than to have a 2010, prepare everything for 2010 to impress people instead of ensuring that these are the kind of services that we would want to provide to our own citizens. Honorable guest.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I will be out of order, and correct me if I am, please. The chairperson mentioned something about the road infrastructure. Don't you maybe think potholes could be the factor or the cause of the accident? You see, I'm a rural person. Chairperson, you will know this. If you are driving from Kokstad to Harding, there is a sign. I'm not too sure of it, but the meaning is, be careful. There are potholes for 10 kilometers. That means for 10 kilometers, you'll be jumping up and down. Prepare yourself for the high jump and down jump. Don't you think, because there is, she mentioned it. If I say this to you, maybe you are going to say, no, it's not our competence. It's the, it's not your competence. It's the provincial responsibility. And the provincial will say, no, it is the local. But can't you at least, because it is the cars that get damaged. It is the people that get damaged. You are running from this pothole, of which you have to know the road. And you know that there's a pothole there, I must run this side. And while you are going this side, there is an oncoming car. You will bump on that car. Don't you maybe think potholes are also causing accidents? Something must be done. I don't know how, or I'm able to influence that, but please.
Chair, I wanted to just make a follow-up on the issue that has been indicated with regards to the delay in responding or to the implementation of the recommendations that have been made by RTMC. I don't know what makes it difficult if we've got this stakeholders forum whereby the 9 MECs from 9 provinces are part of that particular forum. We've got the representatives from SALDA who are part of that particular forum. It means that if really you experience some challenges, those MECs are not taking the matter serious. Because if the MECs are part of that stakeholders forum, they are the ones who are supposed to take these matters up with their provinces and check, demanding a report on how far is the province with regards to the implementation of the recommendations that have been made by RTMC. Then coming to that one of the adverts, that is why I laughed when you talk about the adverts on liquor outlets on our roads. There are so many adverts. I don't know whether it's because I'm coming from the rural area. When you go to Mpumalanga, there are so many adverts on the main roads that this is a bar, this is a liquor store, whatsoever. So I don't know which adverts are you talking about. Maybe I'm talking about a different thing. You're talking about something else. Then the last one, Chair, the mandate of the RTMC is based on the 5 sectors, as we have indicated. Roadworthiness of vehicles, testing and registration of vehicles, testing and licensing of drivers, then the other one is adjudication of fines. There's this fourth one. Can you remind me? Oh, yes. So law enforcement. According to my understanding, the issue of maintenance is the responsibility of the Department of Roads and Transport. I agree with Member Ngele that the potholes are the causes of some of the accidents that we have in our roads. But when looking at the mandate of the RTMC, it is not the responsibility of RTMC, but RTMC must engage the department with regard to the proper maintenance of our roads, because that is what we're saying for the past 10 years, that we build our roads, but we don't have the maintenance plan. After each and every 5 years we build our roads, then our roads are being damaged or deteriorated, especially in Mpumalanga. We've got these lots of trucks around Secunda areas, even the standard and whatever. So when going to those areas, then there's a problem of the roads maintenance. So I think on that one, really we have to engage the Department of Transport to look at the matter to see whether they implement, if there's any maintenance plan that is in place for you to be able to ensure that the number of accidents that we have in our roads, I think that also will reduce the burden of the road accident fund of paying the compensation to the victims. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you look at the contributing factors, you'd realize that largely they are human. And one can actually say that they result perhaps because there's lack of visibility in terms of our traffic officers. And then you ask yourself whether that is deliberate on the part of the traffic officers, because traffic officers is the only profession where brothers and sisters will go to work only to hide under the bridge or behind the tree. So one asks whether it's a deliberate ploy on their part. However, the question that I wanted to pose is this one, that perhaps is it not about time that the parameters of driver lessons are extended perhaps to touch base with improvement behavioral related lessons? Because for me, my understanding of driver fitness is broad. It cannot only relate to physical. You see, as you drive at 120 behind another car that is equally driving at the same speed as you, all that you have to do is to pray for God that you wish that the driver behind you is sober up here so that he doesn't do something funny. Because if he does that, all of you are in a mess. So I think it's quite important. That in a way, because if you look at some of the things that are done by the drivers, particularly the drivers that are dealing with the business of failing our people to public transport, particularly if you look at some of their behaviors, you tend to ask yourself whether this particular incumbent driver got the license because he's fit to be on the road, because you ask yourself whether this person can actually be fit and be on the road and behaving in this particular manner. Is it not about time that we extend the parameters of our lessons in terms of our incumbent drivers? Thanks.
Before I allow you to respond, I think we need to talk about time and manage our situation. We were expecting to have two presentations. In view of the amount of time that we have spent on this issue, and we are not even complete, we have been focusing Mr. Montes and myself to say maybe we postpone the second presentation to next Tuesday. And the two of us are in agreement with that. And we wanted to sensitize the meeting that is what we have been exchanging in to get the agreement of the portfolio committee on that. Thank you. And then there are two issues that I would like to clarify. Also, Honorable Faro has been interacting with me based on my comments about the need for us to have our citizens at heart when we are providing services and not only think of the foreigners. And he explained his position that in 296 days we will have over 1,000 extra buses on the road, which will continue to provide services to our communities in the rural and urban areas, but also to the visitors, which is why we are worried. Not really worried as the portfolio committee. We want to ensure that we have all the pieces of the puzzle in place so that when we have extra people in the country, we are not found to be wandering. That is what, and we have found each other on that one. The other thing that I wanted to find out is, before you respond, as an addition to the questions that have been raised, is whether there is an association of bus operators that the department engages with in the same way that the department engages with the taxi industry. And also to have an understanding of whether, of what is the level of the community involvement in managing the situation of accidents on the roads, and also the response of the nearest police station as opposed to the police station under which the area in which the accident happened. I'm going to simplify this. I was driving between Port Jackson and Pietermaritzburg using Imbumbulu Road, and an accident happened, and I was the first person to see the accident. And I used my cell phone to phone the, it's 10111. Yes. And for the first time I discovered that it's not a toll-free number. But the second issue was that I was referred, I was asked by the person who actually received the call to phone another number instead of that office, because I had already reported as a member of the public the accident, which was my way of contributing to the situation, to alert the authorities that an accident has happened on such and such a road at such and such a time. But instead of the 10111 phoning, because I have given the details, they listened to me, but they then asked me to phone. They gave me another number. When I phoned that number, I was again told that that police station is actually not the police station that would respond to the accident, because the area at which the accident happened fell under the jurisdiction of another police station. How do we deal with that? Because whilst I am being referred to one police station, and then they listen to me and they refer me to the next police station, people are dying. There is no response that is taking place. But also, why should it not be a toll-free number? Why should it consume my airtime when I'm actually doing a community service by alerting the authorities that are there, that there is an accident? How do we expect poor people who have limited airtime to be part of the solution if where they are reporting to, not a toll-free number. It applies again to the bus services. If there is a toll-free number to report that the driver of the bus we are in is speeding and is also consuming alcohol, authorities would respond and prevent an accident from happening rather than a situation where after the accident, then we see a person that is interviewed in a hospital bed saying that the driver was speeding and we were reprimanding him. He was not listening to us. He was consuming alcohol and we had no power to control him. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm not sure whether my colleagues will be able to respond to the particular questions relating the 1-0-1-1 number. I think we will have to investigate that as such. The involvement of safety and security, it is not only a problem with regard to accidents, it's also a problem with regard to the management of border control matters and related issues. So I think we need to unpack all these matters and present that to the committee as a complete report at our next interview.
Okay, I think what I would just like to, because it is that sounds like a burning issue, and I think it is becoming more and more a burning issue, the role of bottles. If I can just quote one scenario. North of Leidenburg in Pumalanga on a Sunday afternoon, early June. Straight road, two brand new vehicles. One vehicle was driven by a lady, LVD. Another vehicle was, I can't remember exactly what it was, with four foreigners inside. Nothing else wrong. No raining, sun, straight, sun was still up. The lady in the LDV, all of a sudden, saw a big bottle on the road. And she swerved to the left, but too fast, she overreacted a bit, tried to bring the vehicle back, head on with the other vehicle, all five people dead. My only one contributory factor, bottle. So there's, it does play a role. And sometimes even more, because at night time you can't even see the bottom. I mean, you say it's not just you messing up your vehicle, it's because of overreaction of people. And what we did find is, unfortunately, the roads people also seem to be losing their skills in the maintenance of bottles. Because you will notice a stretch of road and the bottles are getting bigger and bigger. Then the teams would go out there, fill up the bottles, but 2 weeks later, the pothole is empty again because they don't use the right equipment or skills to fix the pothole. So they're forever, every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, filling up potholes. So we need to look at closer relationship also between the road people to inform them of bad patches. But they themselves should develop proper maintenance teams and the skills, because to continuously use the same people every 2 weeks to fill this or refill the same pothole, I think that is a problem. And while we are particularly some of the lower class roads is beginning more and more to contribute to this, not only because of the potholes, but signs being knocked down, road traffic signs, important signs at important junctions. And then even the people staying there no longer know where they have to turn off at night time because you can't see the pinpoint where to turn off. Pavement markings, white lines, disappear, it is not maintained properly, cutting of grass. So the roads factor, what we found over particularly the 5 past years, increased from about overall of 8% in crashes, and that is now mainly related to fatal crashes, to about 20%. So the roads factor is getting bigger, and that is general maintenance overall. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, I think we'll need to revisit the issue of the potholes.
because it leaves much to be desired. You are correct. In some situations, they get filled, and in truth time, they are open and wider than they were. So to us, it is an issue of skills, it is an issue of technology, and it is the issue of the product that is used. But we also see the filling in of the potholes related to skill transfer and job creation of the young people and women out there who are unemployed. It fits very, very well to expanded public works program, and we would want to see how it relates to skills development in this country. Is it done without looking at the skilling objective of the people that do not have skills, and also linking it to job creation, to also poverty reduction, and also to searching for the right technology that would result with filled in potholes that are not opening up in 2 or 3 weeks' time, because there are those products that would open up within 2 weeks, and there are those products that are durable. What is it that we are doing? And also taking into consideration that the first president of a democratically elected South African government country launched a massacre campaign in February 2005, and he highlighted a very important issue that I think we have all neglected. He said the massacre campaign should be an ongoing campaign. And one of the areas of focus of the massacre campaign is that we have three types of communities that are receiving three types of different services. There is an urban community that has got adequate services that would require maintenance to prevent them from deteriorating. And what we are beginning to see in terms of the potholes is the neglect of adequate existing road infrastructure. He then said we have township and peri-urban communities that have got poor, inadequate services that would need upgrading and improvement. And what we are talking about, the recommendations in as far as the traffic engineering, we are referring to that. That when an accident has happened and a recommendation has been made to provincial and local government, those structures need to act because it relates to upgrading and improvement of the infrastructure. Because the infrastructure that we inherited is an infrastructure that was not designed for the high volumes of traffic that we experience today. The third area was the area of communities that did not have services at all, and those are found in the rural areas. And he said we would need to provide services to rural areas, not poor services, because poor rural communities are poor. He said services that would bring the poor communities to the same level of the urban communities. And our intervention should speak to that, that is, there should be no poor service for a poor community. What will take up the level of the poor community is when we provide them with services that
are given to the rich communities so as to deal with the uneven levels of development. So the people that make a lot of noise are people that have got means of talking. And unfortunately, people in the townships where there are lots of potholes and poor services are unable to talk for themselves because they don't have means to talk. Poor people in the rural areas where the services are not getting can't talk for themselves. But the only way that will make us to balance the situation is when we are mindful of the Masakane campaign. In the State of the Nation address, the state president pointed out that there was a need for having 500,000 jobs by December 2009. And one area in transport that could provide those jobs is where we begin to identify roads that have got poor infrastructure, especially in potholes, and deploy people to work in those areas and close those potholes. We would have done three things. We would have provided people with skills in road infrastructure. We would have provided employment. We would have reduced poverty. And we would have contributed in meeting the targets that have been set for us by the state president. And I would want us to close on that note and take this opportunity to thank the department and the entities for availing themselves. And we would then revisit the second presentation next week. And also we will inform the department and the entities when we are making a follow-up on issues that we left hanging. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chairperson, before you close, just a comment. But, oh, thank you. And I'm not the only one who will say maybe because I'm old. All of us, even the young ones, cannot please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, I declare the meeting closed. Thank you.